This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashrin Johan. Dato Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob from UMNO has been appointed the 9th Prime Minister of Malaysia after commanding the confidence of 114 out of 220 members of parliament. But what exactly do we know about Ismail Sabri? Does his history and how he handled the Ministry of Defence portfolio for approximately 18 months under the Muhyiddin administration give us any insight as to the kind of Prime Minister that we can expect him to be? Now, joining me on the show to discuss all of this and more is Dr. Bridget Welsh, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. Welcome back to the show, Bridget. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Great to be here.
All right, let's start at the beginning, Bridget. Who exactly is Dato Sri Ismail Sabri? When did he kickstart his political career and how has he fared over the years?
So Ismail Sabri has a very interesting political history. There are a couple of important features that I would say that I think kind of make him stand out. Number one, he is a Mahathir generation person. He came into political life in the early 1980s. He joined the party in 1987. He is, in a sense, I think, very much defined by Mahathir in terms of his early political life. And of course, Mahathir's children politically, Najib and Muhyiddin, which we'll come to in a moment. The second thing that is defining about Ismail Sabri is that he is a party man. He brands him UMNO. He came very much through the ranks, when he was elected to the vice presidency in 2018, he did so at the highest level of popularity within the party itself. But to understand how he rose, it's interesting that he benefited from the divisions within the party. So he came into the party after 1987, after the party had split. He really had interesting advantages after 2015, where he became an important, prominent party hierarchy when Muhyiddin Yassin, of course, was sacked from the party. And ironically, it was Muhyiddin Yassin who actually also pulled him out in among the different contenders and gave him a position within his government. He became the fastest promotion from a DPM to a prime minister within a month as a result of the kind of the positioning. Division within UMNO basically gave him a political advantage. Now, going back to his career, what you saw is that he's from Pahang, from Berah. He's been in politics as an MP since 2004. I consider him kind of a local warlord, but one that has kind of strategic ties, especially to the most prominent politician and I think the most dominant figure within UMNO, which is Najib Razak. He has been groomed within the party itself, a political secretary, Tunku Razali, Shabri Chik, all the way to playing roles within the division chiefs within UMNO. He knows he's kind of a party-made man through the different positions within UMNO. He made his political career by being in the right place at the right time and also in some ways not being threatening, because his ambition was not clearly always to the forefront. There's some politicians that really, are clearly ambitious in the political profile. But Ismail Sabri was seen to be a party loyalist first, and then his ambition secondary. He's known in many incidences of expressing racialized views on Malay political life, from the boycott of Chinese goods to comments on different communities. And this goes back to him being a party man, a man who actually is rising within the party, so speaking to the dialect, to the discourse of UMNO. And we know that traditionally leaders have risen within UMNO by expressing and adopting kind of race-based politics, especially after the Mahathir era. This is not to excuse the behavior, but to explain it from a perspective of analysis. And I think that he, in a sense, he's somewhat he's somewhat more like Muhyiddin than Najib, in that I think he is in some ways much more Malay-based in terms of his identity. He is less cosmopolitan. He is more inward-looking. He speaks English because he was trained and others, but he's not comfortable in English. Right. He's not comfortable in a cosmopolitan environment. And of course, you know, he is also came into politics at a time where there is a sense of Malay dominance. And so he's not seen as having robust, multi-ethnic type of social networks and milieu that other leaders have, or even those within UMNO. That said, you know, he is able to engage because of his legal training, because of his kind of serving in five different portfolios, most recently defense, to, you know, when he first came into politics, into the youth and sports. You know, I think about him, and I talk about this as kind of a lucky person at a very unlucky time. Unlucky time in the sense that he's used political party divisions to his advantage, but also subsequently he's now facing arguably the most difficult challenge that any prime minister is facing, not only in terms of a crisis that the country is facing, but also, you know, in terms of having to adopt new practices in order to position himself in terms of political stability. But if we look at his specific portfolios, we can see that he has been a rising figure within the party for quite some time. And I think in particular, after 2015. And politically, you know, he has been a bridge to different factions. He's a bridge to between Muhyiddin and Najib, for example. But he also is, you know, has connections with Zahid because he's been, you know, he's been appointed not necessarily as a Zahid loyalist, more of a Najib loyalist, but he's seen as being able to work well with other people. In terms of a team player, because he is, as I said, a party man.
Right. Now, you mentioned a lot of things that I think we will dive into throughout this discussion, right? But one thing that stood out in particular is this idea of race-based politics that Ismail Sabri has been known to play. And you know, and in his inaugural speech recently, when he became prime minister, Ismail Sabri used the phrase Keluarga Malaysia. Now, however, in response to that, netizens, especially on Twitter, immediately unearthed statements from his, you know, from 2019, many of which have very, very strong racial overtones. Now, are these signs of things to come? And when I say that, is should ethnic minorities in the country be worried? Or were his statements in 2019 merely this, you know, just playing it to the base, you know, this idea of performance politics, riling up the crowd? Where does his politics really lie when it comes to this?
Well, I think this is a difficult question, right? And I think at a certain degree, we should be careful not to to prejudge what his actions may be, but I think based on his roles in various different ministries and the comments and that he's made and what he's unfortunately known for, the racism that has been associated with him is quite significant. And in some ways, you know, when we look at politicians with in UMNO that have risen through the ranks, there's always a recognition that some of this is for political posturing. And it's not so clear how much of this for Ismail Sabri is political posturing or how much is it that he actually genuinely believes. And I think this is where, when I go back earlier to what I talk about as him being a Mahathir era politician, there is this kind of the sense of political space that the Malay, Ketuanan Melayu politics that is very much within the DNA of this kind of new generation of leaders, where the role for ethnic minorities is not necessarily one based on equality and not based on kind of mutual respect. And I think that in this context, it is a much more difficult thing to navigate from a perspective of kind of maintaining inclusive politics, because the kind of the racialized outlook of politics is quite deeply embedded. The second aspect of this is that, you know, the politics of the last decade especially has been one where they have used race-based polarization as a way to maintain political support. And so Buyidin's government, the All-Malay PN government, was supposed to be a government that appealed towards race. And Ismail Sabri was an integral part of that type of government. I think Ismail Sabri, as a figure politically, appealed towards the grassroots, especially being the most prominent figure of UMNO within the PN government at that time. And I think as a consequence, what is really challenging is whether or not the political DNA and the political practices of using polarization and race-based politics can be stepped away from. In a meaningful way. And if a government is insecure, you know, what there are kind of reactive practices that a UMNO-based government in particular has used, which has been to appeal to race and to use the more coercive apparatus, of which keep in mind that Ismail Sabri's part of the Najib government was also an integral element. So in this area, are there areas to be concerned? Yes. At the same time, it is important to see that in a number of key steps that Ismail Sabri has made so far, first of all, his speech did speak about reaching out. Number one, Kalawataka, a family, and lots of some of them may be extended family, but still a family. and then the second aspect of that is that, you know, he has sat down with the opposition publicly. So, you know, he sat down with other members of his coalition privately. But if what we see, the first public major meeting of a politician has been to sit down with the opposition, which has had much stronger support of ethnic minorities. And I think that is an important outreach element. The challenge Ismail Sabri faces is to move from being an UMNO man, and not just in terms of his outlook, but also in terms of the practices of UMNO, into becoming a national leader at a time of crisis. And he's facing significant tests in doing that. I think we can say cautiously there have been some optimistic steps cautiously, and the concern is whether or not he returns back to the DNA that we've seen for, you know, over 15 years of which he's been in politics from a MP, although he's been in politics much longer than that, you know, since 30 years,
right?
Nearly 30 years, yes.
Prior to becoming the Prime Minister of Malaysia, he was Minister of Defence under the Perikatan National Cabinet. And, you know, he was a key component in Perikatan National's pandemic management. As we know, over the past 7 months, especially, this could perhaps go back, you know, to Sabah elections last year, Malaysia has struggled to control the COVID-19 pandemic. More than 13,000 people have died. How much blame should Ismail Sabri shoulder?
I think that he has been pivotal in the management of Muhyiddin's government. And what we saw out of his leadership was the prominent role he was in terms of making statements. He also made considerable initiatives in terms of adopting the kind of lockdown processes and empowering the more conservative apparatus of the deep state in terms of treatment, for example, of undocumented persons and the stateless communities. And of course, you know, the communication that was practiced was not necessarily cohesive. In any sort of meaningful way. And I think that, you know, he was and he cannot step away from being an integral part of what were the failures of mismanagement. And keep in mind, for many of the Malay heartland, Ismail Sabri became a figure of comfort, a figure of somebody who was actually seen as he increased his popularity. He was seen as somebody that they could identify with. So I you know, while I my own position remains that there is considerable mismanagement and of which he was an integral part of, I would say that one has to acknowledge that this is not seen across the country among everyone in that particular area. And this goes back to the kind of issue I was raising earlier. Can he step up in a different way? Step out. So, you know, we're talking about him stepping out of UMNO, becoming a national leader. How can he step away from the and learn the lessons of the previous government into a different role as a national leader from the perspective of COVID management? And in some ways, many of the positions that Ismail Sabri took a reflection of him being an UMNO person. You know, the running the reliance on the coercive aspirations and dimensions of the state, you know, the uses of fining, the uses of, you know, wanting to control the population, not necessarily talking to the population as opposed to with the population and engaging, and also not and being resistant to wanting to take new policies and approaches. I think these were things that were clearly evident. And I think it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he can get past those. And this is, you know, there were real questions about competency of the PN government, of which Ismail Sabri was seen to be part of the shortcomings in this regard. And this is where the new cabinet team that he puts in is going to be carefully watched, because Ismail Sabri doesn't come in with a strong reputation internationally or domestically, and he will need a team to boost his leadership as a PM.
Bridget, you wrote a fantastic article on Between the Lines on the lessons that we can reflect on from the previous administration and the things that we can really learn. Now, what are the key lessons that Ismail Sabri needs to learn from Muhyiddin's tenure as the Prime Minister? Because this is a chance for a hard reset.
Well, I don't believe in this idea of reset, because I think it's very difficult to have a reset, all right? Because there's still too many continuations of the past that are deeply embedded, of which I'm trying to describe even in this conversation. I think that I think it's less about a reset and in the hope of things being able to be fantastically new, but more to have a redirection and to find a kind of new sets of paths. And I think these are the questions that when we look at the issues of the direction. Now, my article spoke about kind of the inheritance of Machiavellian politics and the kind of the focus on elitism and not necessarily kind of changing the nature of governance. When we think about the kind of lessons of this last 18 months that were Muhyiddin was in power, 17 months plus, we can say, the real challenge is not to move back to the policies of the past, to move to a different circumstances for a different situation. And if anything we've learned, there are the need for a more inclusive, a more coordinated type of governance. Also, you know, if we look at the specifics for Ismail Sabri, that the risks for government come from UMNO and from UMNO itself as a destabilizer and also as a type of politics that that is focused on a kind of siloization as opposed to a coordination, a sense of kind of dominance or predominance as opposed to a politics that needs more personal, interactive, and cooperative type of arrangements. And the move away from kind of government being about themselves, but to be a government that is actually focused on governing for the people. And there wasn't an adequate focus on delivery and delivery more holistically. You know, it was always much of what the delivery was, oh, here are all these packages, we're sending them, and that's it. And then people lined up and had a period of time to get benefits. And this was a short-term type of relief, which did not necessarily have sustainability. So among these other issues are better cooperation, a move to move towards more away from reactive to more proactive governance, focus not, you know, to recognize the need for competency, not complacency, to kind of not be so inward looking and no self-centered. You know, one of the shortcomings of Muhyiddin Yassin's government was that he became so disconnected to the reality of people's experiences and, in fact, and less empathetic. And, of course, the government set poor examples with double standards. So in this context, you know, this is, again, going to be very challenging for Ismail Sabri to move away from these practices of which he was an integral part about to a different way. And part of that is also having a much more global recognition of where Malaysia's position is, not from a perspective of the region as well as the rest of the world. You know, when global supply trains are being cut, Malaysia's long-term prosperity is being undermined, and the jobs for Malaysians are being jeopardized. And it is necessary to see these things more holistically as opposed to more piecemeal. And that, I think, is a real challenge. And these are some of the lessons that you can need to be focused on. You know, if Ismail Sabri adopts a survivalist mode of politics, of trying to be, and to focus on it, elite politics and politicking, his days will be numbered.
On the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. After the break, I'll be asking her if Ismail Sabri's appointment as the Prime Minister will intensify the conflict between the court cluster and the cabinet cluster in UMNO. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. And we're talking about Malaysia's ninth Prime Minister, Ismail Sabri Yaakob. So, Bridget, yesterday in a move that has certainly gotten many people talking, Ismail Sabri and Pakatan Harapan, specifically Harapan's top leadership, Anwar Ibrahim, Lim Guan Eng and Mat Sabu, they released a joint statement essentially stating willingness to work with each other to fight the pandemic, as well as focus on important institutional reforms. Now, you wrote something very interesting on Twitter yesterday, Bridget, and I pretty much what you wrote is, and I quote, Harapan signs pledge to work with Ismail Sabri, and in doing so, Harapan stakes claim as part of Keluarga Malaysia, while members of Ismail Sabri's own coalition differ over cabinet. Perhaps you can break this down for us. What exactly did you mean?
Well, so first of all, let's start with the end part, which is that, you know, it is no it's no secret that the cabinet negotiations have been quite fierce. You know, you have to manage and manage factions within factions in the different parties, and reach some sort of political accommodation of high expectations. And keep in mind that the Muhyiddin Yassin's government is essentially the similar type of government of similar players in this government, and the mode has been, you know, political positions and the relative power of the different actors. And in particular, Ismail Sabri faces the challenge of being an UMNO politician, being an UMNO man, being socialized under UMNO dominance to a situation where UMNO has to play a different type of role and make accommodations within different sets of actors at a time when his own party has also serious factionalism, of which he has to accommodate that, and which you can go to specifics. So, yes, managing the different sources of instability is crucial, and I would argue the cabinet has been his big first test. But the other things that I think are more interesting about this particular relationship with the opposition, it is, you know, it is, I would say, baby steps. If you read the statement, it's worded with lots of caveats for exit. It is actually, lots of rhetoric as opposed to anything substantive in terms of the relationship. It's kind of a verbal pledge to work.
Right.
And of course, subsequent to that, it has been the indication that he will have a vote of confidence from them, at least in the initial one, so that the government will be able to not have to focus immediately on trying to give positions to everybody to try to make sure they have enough sets of votes. So this is stability in the short term. But to me, what is more interesting is that I think given Ismail Sabri's racialized political socialization and commentary in the past, what Pakatan Harapan has done is put themselves at the table. So what he's done is put ethnic minorities and concerns of their constituents at the table, and they're by being part of the family. All right. Mm. So we're saying, hey, we're working with you. We're sitting down. We're at the dinner table together, eating obviously a halal meal, but still a meal that is one that is being shared in that context. And keep in mind that all of the politicians across all the different divides should learn the lesson that they could have done a better job managing COVID-19 and being more constructive. So this is a kind of move towards that. And it's been very interesting to see who among UMNO in particular who have supported this, right? So we see Khalid Norden, for example. And keep in mind, there are others within politics who want to see this kind of move towards the middle, right? But politically, beyond being at the table and having a kind of pushing for a Malaysia table, Keluarga Malaysia, right? This is in this context.
Yes.
The opposition has made, I think, a number of kind of savvy maneuvers. Number one is that the opposition cannot be targeted and blamed for failures because they've made a step towards good faith and cooperation. At least initially, the politics can't become to say us versus them type of dynamic in this regard. And obviously, there will be steps. It'll be very difficult for the opposition to move away from their practices as well. But it is also a move towards a kind of middle of away from the polarization of traditional politics. But at the same time, what the opposition has done is given a lot of political space to Ismail to basically go back to his bickering allies and say, hey, I have the numbers now. So if you come on or not in terms of his cabinet. And of course, it gives him space to manage the sources of instability that he does face, which we can go into in detail. But I think that what we can see is that he has now been given a platform. The royalty has been pushing for a kind of new politics and others. The circumstances were put out there by Muhyiddin Yassin himself, promising sets of reforms. I think what is meaningful, as I said earlier, is that there is nothing substantive. It's a pledge, right? So there is no specific concrete reforms and others, but it is one where it kind of there is the kind of toning down of some of the politicking and giving a space. How long that space will be, we'll see. But giving a space for that, and I think in some ways this may be from an elite perspective very interesting tactically, but I think that the challenge that opposition faces is that the society will not give space. The opposition and the faith and the government will not be a very long honeymoon by many people in the society itself. The ground is not sweet for Ismail Sabri, and he will have has a very big trust deficit. We can see, for example, in the petition that opposed him coming into office. And so he will have a long way to go to sort of paint himself as a Malaysian leader. This particular helps him to do that and gives him this, the opposition cannot be blamed for that. But the opposition also has a risk of losing their political base if they are not able to channel some of the concerns. But of those that are most upset about what is happening. But at the same juncture, they're also strengthening their political base by going towards the middle, by being seen as cooperative and trying to focus on issues of governance. So tactically, there are some very interesting dimensions of what is happening. But for me, the most important thing is that it from a race-based type of analysis, is that they've put themselves in the middle at the table.
Now, you brought up sitting at the dinner table together, and like you rightfully mentioned, it's too early to say whether it's it's just rhetoric or it's going to move in a more earnest direction. But I'm wondering what Ismail Sabri's component parties, what his own allies think about him sitting at the dinner table with Pakatan Harapan, particularly DAP. Because UMNO has been very adamant in the past about not working with DAP. We remember, Zahid Hamidi from a few months ago, no Anwar, no DAP. Very strong, very clear words he sent out there. And so have other parties in the coalition. I mean, PAS, for example, have made it very, very clear in recent years that they are, as completely polar opposites from DAP. They do not want to do anything with DAP. Now, how will this joint statement released yesterday impact DAP's image in the Malay heartland? And also, how will it impact Ismail Sabri's relationship with members of his coalition?
So I think it's important to remember that Ismail Sabri was the leader of the opposition when Pakatan Harapan was in power. And so as a consequence, he was able to, he sat down with Harapan many times before, right, as the leader of opposition in terms of discussion of sets of issues, right, not necessarily in the public arena, but he knows the individuals in that context. I think that, the views of the DAP among the UMNO base still remain extremely negative. And I think generally the DAP polling indicates do not do well among Malay voters across the board. I don't think this particular initiative will fundamentally change that. I mean, the focus was on Matsabo's stylish outfit, as opposed to
it was very stylish, we have to say.
indeed. But I think all of them looked relatively stylish. Yes. To say, to be fair to all of them, but I think Matsabo probably the most. But irrespective of that, I would say that all of the politicians face a credibility gap. All right. And so their comments, are being made. People are taking all of that with a fair amount of grain of salt. They're looking at it and say, okay, this is politics, as opposed to anything substantive. So, and where I think the politicians, it's not really about DAP or UMNO or others. The real big shift is the way that they view all the politicians as playing political games, as opposed to focusing on the realities and concerns. So do I think that the things are going to change in the heartland just because of people having sit down at a dinner table? No. I think what you have to, things have to shift in a fundamental way. Now to the allies. I think the allies recognize that Ismail Sabri is being savvy in order to reach out and to shore up his political position. I think for some, this creates confidence, right? Because they are tired of being, part of a government that is also focused on politicking in that area. For others, it seizes his opportunity, right? Because now Ismail Sabri may be seen as tainting himself by making that move. So this will allow them to kind of appeal to kind of the base in a particular way. I think that, people are reacting with a kind of wait and see approach. If you notice that across most of the social media yesterday, there was either silence or support. So you don't see extensive comments of criticism of having this sit down relationship. And I think that it is, as I said, because it lacked, it was more about show than substance. And we will have to see how this plays out in the composition of the cabinet, and also, importantly, how this plays out in the composition of the policy direction and the behavior of the government in terms of how it moves forward. I think it is much too early to see any fundamental shifts from this. But at the same time, it is a positive direction towards a more kind of middle ground policies. My attention personally is less on the meetings, but what sort of policy shifts are we going to see that are going to be able to engender a more comprehensive COVID management, as well as a one that is focused on, that builds confidence for the international community? Because I'm very concerned about where Malaysia has positioned itself regionally and globally as a result of poor mismanagement. At the same time, equally so, the impact on Malaysian society has been devastating and continues to be devastating in terms of the death rates and the case numbers and the economic hardship and the issues of emotional and anxiety. People are not used to having government change, and this creates additional layers of anxiety for many Malaysians, which I would point out that, the government hasn't collapsed when you haven't had a prime minister. society moves on, right. In that context. But the fact is that it's still, it is blatantly clear that there needs to be a much better support and a recalibration of what is happening in the health sector for a more comprehensive policy. I would be looking to see where those complementary types of elements could be there. An important step, again, will now be to use the parliament as an arena to kind of have cooperation that's meaningful and dialogue. And this, at its core, the question really is whether or not Ismail Sabri's government is willing to engage in the meaningful reforms that are not for one side or the other, but for that needed for the country. And that, I think, what I saw at the table was there weren't enough meat courses or protein courses for the vegetarians, at the table.
I guess the most immediate thing that everyone is keeping their eye on at the edge of the seats to see the kind of prime minister that Ismail Sabri may be, it may be an indication of the kind of prime minister that he is or he will be, is this cabinet lineup, right? And Ismail Sabri reportedly will be announcing the cabinet later today. What should he keep in mind when appointing members of his cabinet?
Well, I mean, we spoke earlier about the lessons, right, mm-hmm. for the Muhyiddin Yassin government. And I've publicly spoke about this. You need to have competent people in the key positions that are going to involve COVID-19. You cannot have somebody who doesn't understand, who's concerned about themselves and their beauty regime as opposed to social welfare. All right. You cannot have somebody who may have a medical degree, but doesn't seem to understand the medical issues in the health minister. And you cannot have somebody who is, in terms of managing the economy, is changing rules all the time for businesses and doesn't recognize that the ecosystem of small business is absolutely essential for the larger dimensions of the multinationals and others that operate within the Malaysian economy. You need competent people. Unfortunately, one of the challenges Ismail faces is that you have a dynamic where the number of people who are competent within his coalition or seem to be having those skill sets is not necessarily as high as it should be in that area. So competency is an important element. The other thing is inclusiveness. For goodness sake, please put some there are many competent women in parliament.
Right.
There are, you need to have a multi-ethnic cooperation. You need to give meaningful positions to both Sabah and Sarawak. I mean, Sarawak will be there because of the coalition, but let's see a fair amount of Sabahans and also representation from different parts of the country more generally that actually speak and allow those voices to be articulated, especially in places where you have weak state governments, such as like that of Kedah, for example. And I think that inclusiveness is an important element. But I think people want a cabinet that is smaller and that is more coordinated and that people are working together. One of the challenges of the last two governments is that everyone sort of were working on their own, right? Positioning themselves, and there wasn't that cohesiveness.
Right.
I think we can argue that the most cohesive part of Pakatan Harapan government was when you only had the 10 cabinet members. And then after that, it became more factionalized, right? Well, I think the same thing, a smaller cabinet can actually do that. Now, obviously, we'll see the size, and I have a feeling it will not be as small as people would like. But let us take a look at what is what emerges from that. But it is the need for coordination. And then finally, I would say, what I'd be looking for is whether or not they have a vision, right? Unfortunately, too much of the previous government was on autopilot, and there wasn't leadership. And I think, Ismail Sabri, for all of his strengths, one of the shortcomings is that he has not been seen as a visionary leader. So therefore, he will need a team that can help him to have that vision. He will need to let others be stars so that it not be about himself in that context. And in some ways, that's strategic, right? Because it allows him to do that. But again, the feudal type of centralized practices may hinder that. But if there's more sense of wanting to be less about him and more about Malaysia, I think will be a stronger cabinet. And keep in mind that Ismail Sabri comes in with considerable problems of legitimacy among large sections of the society. And a lot of fatigue, not only in part of the electorate, but also internationally. Malaysia doesn't rank as strong as it should be in terms of where international capital will be coming to. And Ismail's appointment, which has been seen as more of the same, is actually, and even in some cases, worse than the same, because it's a move back to the previous government before 2018. We'll have to make bigger steps in order to be able to kind of say, "Hey, no, we are not going there." And Ismail Sabri will have to be not a Najib man or a Muhyiddin man or a Mahathir man. He has to be Ismail Sabri, which is different than them. And he has to ultimately be Malaysia's man, which as opposed to representing one community. And these are not easy things to do, especially for somebody who has been thrust into that position very quickly. And in some ways, may have not been ready for that position from a real perspective.
Now, Bridget, as we wrap this conversation up, let's zoom in on UMNO in particular, because I think a question on many Malaysians' minds, as particularly those invested in the proceedings of the 1MDB cases and various other corruption trials, ongoing corruption trials, is what will happen next to the alleged kleptocrats. So we know that there are conflicts between the various factions in UMNO, namely the court cluster and the cabinet cluster. Will Ismail Sabri's appointment as the Prime Minister intensify this conflict, or will it unify UMNO and perhaps further bolster Najib and Zahid's popularity?
So there are lots of things here that I'd like to unpack. All right. So first of all, I'd say that there are not two different factions. They're multiple. Okay. All right. We can talk about the court cluster. We can see the previous government that was, in that particular way. But I would also say there was kind of the party cluster, right, from defending the party in that area. And we also see lots of cliques. All right. Ismail Sabri has jumped the queue in terms of leadership. Hishamuddin Hussein, other contenders are there. And one of the things I look at is how we will be able to accommodate the other members of UMNO that are contenders to his leadership position, because inevitably there will be in the minds of many UMNO politicians the party election in this process. Second thing I would say is don't equate Najib and Zahid together.
Okay.
They're two very different things. Ismail's relationship with Najib is different than that of Zahid. And why that this is important is Zahid is the party president. And Zahid is the one, I would argue, is facing the most potential displacement.
Right.
And his cases are coming close up for resolution. Keep in mind, for all of his, Najib has been convicted. And it is unlikely that unless he gets a pardon for the trials that he still has yet not finished then he's not returning to that position. So Ismail Sabri is now the first PM that has now come into that position without being party president. In a sense, or even expected to be party president, right? There's been times when other people have come in without being party president, but they were expected to be party president. Now, this is a situation where Zahid is not giving up that party presidency, and so my expectation is that there will be tension between those two, and it is of course not coincidental that that Ismail Sabri has made a point to go and see him to sort of showcase the differences, but that is a relationship that will be very challenging to navigate. Because in order for Ismail Sabri to strengthen his position within the party, he will have to. But one of the factors that he may choose to do would be to reach out to those who would like to have a change in the party leadership.
Right.
Who have been, and keep in mind, one of the drivers has been those that have opposed to Zahid. And of course, you know, what Ismail Sabri's leadership at prime minister level says for UMNO is that there is a generational change taking place within that party.
Right.
And of course, that in itself has its own dynamics in terms of loyalties, patronage patterns, we can see those have not happened significantly to the party because Mahathir held it for such a long time. But it is one that is actually destabilizing. Part of your question was, do you think that Ismail Sabri will accommodate the court cluster? All right, and my answer to that is differentiate the court cluster among the different players.
Okay.
And also recognize that always there will be some sort of accommodation, but it may not be over the cases. It may be over other things. But we will see how it evolves. Do I see the 1MDB cases moving forward? Yes. And I think that it's in Malaysia's interest to continue to have these cases moving forward. And the longer they extend, the less that it helps for the country's international image and also for a resolution for the country to move on. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, Ismail Sabri is dealing with the legacy of 1MDB, which is the shortfall in finances. He comes in as a prime minister that has less revenue options in crisis management than previous ones. Do I see UMNO's factionalism reducing? No. In fact, it will continue to intensify. The question will be how Ismail Sabri navigates this. Ismail Sabri, in a meaningful way, will have to deal with one of the sources of instability. Instability is UMNO. And keep in mind, UMNO has brought down the last two governments, Pakatan and Muhyiddin. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't feel like Ismail Sabri is doing the same, I think it will there will be in sources of instability. Unfortunately, I think they still also recognize that Ismail Sabri is an UMNO man, and that gives him credence within the party. The question is how much of an UMNO man is and how much of a Mahathir UMNO man is he to stay in that position.
On that note, Bridget, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Most welcome. Always a pleasure to be here.
That was Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.